other questions?
K-Zero EZU question.
Go ahead, Mike.
Joe, I've been wanting to ask this for weeks or actually several months. What is dragging pipes? Can you explain that to me, or does that have anything to do with what we're talking about tonight?
Well, I'm going to go to my good buddy W2MIC, because he was initially back when the old days we used to have dragging pipes. Would you like to explain that to Mike, Mark?
W2MIC. Yes, indeed. Dragging pipes are an interference problem. It is an audio effect that we heard on various NCARC repeaters, particularly the 145.115 and several others at various times. It is caused by spurious emissions and feedback, and the audio sound is extremely distinctive. If you've ever picked up a 10 or 20 foot length of pipe, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 inch diameter, and dragged it along a concrete floor, that pipe resonates. It has a resonant frequency, puts out a tone, and as you scrape it across the floor, it makes noise, and the noise warbles in frequency, and it really, honest to God, sounds like you're dragging a big iron pipe. It's caused by mistuning, in the case of the repeaters, mistuning in the circulators and in the notch filters. I believe that James has managed to eradicate all of it using very careful tuning and making sure that all of the components in the repeaters are in spec. I do not have a recording of it, although maybe Kevin does.
Sorry, Mark, I missed your end of your question there.
Kevin, do you by any chance have an audio recording of the dragging pipe effect on our repeaters in the past? I thought you did.
I don't believe I do, but if you hear it, you definitely would know it. It's like Mark says, it's a very distinctive sound. It's not an official term, but it is the sound that we used to get. And I would say that if we do get any kind of interference, it's not going to sound the same way now because we have a whole different repeater system involved. But yes, that's where it came from, N7GES.
Thank you both. I appreciate it very much. KE0EZU, clear.
Yeah, as they said, Mike, it's not one of those technical terms. It just sounded like a dragging pipe, so that's what we called on. Right now, I want to play something to you folks. I'm hoping you'll be able to hear this. So I'm going to let this drop, and then I'm going to bring it back. W2MIC, did you hear that?
W2MIC, yes, it is a sound I recognize very well.
Okay, folks, that's what tonight's conversation is. Not to help me out, but that is what I'm talking about. That's 40 meter, and it only happens, like, tonight it was 7:06, the night before it was 7:16, and I have no idea when it goes off, but it's late. So, this is what they call RFI, or radio frequency interference, and it blocks all signals for me. And that's what we're really talking about, any type of thing that actually causes that. Let's go to N0WIQ. Do you have any comments, or would you like to start us out tonight?
Well, Joe, I've always got something to say. RFI is one of those things that's very spooky. First, you have to figure out what's causing it, and then you have to figure out how to eliminate it, so...
Okay, thanks for that. Mark, W2MIC, back to RFI.
W2MIC, sure, I have pages and pages of notes ready to go. Where do you want to start? Identifying the source, fixing the source, attenuating the problem at your radio, fixing your station, controlling power line pickup, anywhere you want to go.
You know, I bought that ARRL book. And I don't want to make this my issue tonight. I just want to make this I think the first place you start is identifying the source, wouldn't you? Or identifying what sound that actually is.
Yep, there are several good sources. The ARRL Handbook, which I recommend to every ham, Chapter 11 is on RFI. And Joe, I'm sure we will have some copies of the handbook for the lending library. The ARRL has a book specifically on RFI. Generally, it's a three-stage process. You're trying to figure out what frequency or frequencies are hitting you, and then where they're coming from, and whether you can fix them at the source or at the receiving end. In order to figure out what's coming in, you can simply use your radio receiver and listen and record where the noise is the highest, in other words, what frequencies. A spectrum analyzer is a super useful tool. They cost about as much as an HF radio. But these days we have the cute little software-defined radio dongles, which are USB dongles with a wide-range receiver in them. The AirSpy goes for about 200, and there is the Play version for about 150. So you're in the 150 to 200 range, and this will give you, with free software on your PC's screen, a readout of what all the frequencies are and where the noise is. And that's tremendously helpful, because once you know what frequency or frequencies the noise is coming in on, then you start to be able to figure out where it's coming from and how to abate it. Around the house, a very useful technique is start by popping your main breaker. Shut off all power in the house. If you are operating your radio, operate your radio from a 12-volt battery, like a car battery, which is absolutely silent. There is no noise on a battery. And be sure to have your power line, your power wires coming from the battery to your radio, twisted as a twisted pair. The general principle here is that every wire is an antenna. The power wire is an antenna, the coax shield is an antenna, your microphone cable is an antenna, the green wire in the outlet box in the wall is an antenna, because it goes 50, 70, 80 feet to your breaker box. If you have above ground power lines, mine are buried, the power lines coming into your breaker box is an antenna. Everything is an antenna, and you have to chase down and eliminate all of those. Once you get your battery running and turn off your breaker, now you are listening to noise coming in from your neighbors, and you are trying to figure out where the heck that is and where it's coming from. An SDR, a software-defined radio, is a super useful way to do that, but a little old battery-powered, remember, battery, AM radio set to a frequency where there is no broadcast is usually a very useful RFI detector. And as you turn your breaker back on, main breaker, and then start turning off all of your breakers except one, looking to see if the source of the noise is inside your house, you can figure out what circuit it's on, because only one breaker is on, and you can very frequently chase down the noise just by holding an AM radio up to power supplies, wall warts, AM radios, light fixtures. Somebody was mentioning grow operations with LED lights, any kind of a switching power supply. Once you figure out where the source is, if it's your neighbor, you take your axe or your sledgehammer and you go fix it. Oh, I'm just kidding. Well, mostly. If it's inside the house, you have a number of things you can do. Number one, make sure all of your power cables are not zip cords, but are twisted pairs. And if you have to cut the end off and split the zip cord apart and twist them, do that, and then put a new end on. Every radio that I have cut the ends off, leaving me with two separate wires, one red, one black. I have twisted those wires together, and then I've put Anderson power poles on the end so I can connect them up to whatever. Your radio's own power supply wires are probably the worst culprits you have, because they are antennas, and they will pick stuff up right next to the radio chassis. we have a classic problem in cheap, I was going to use another word, components. It's called the pin one problem. And how you're supposed to do wiring is you're supposed to bring the third wire, the green wire, from the outlet to the metal chassis. And what we see people doing instead, particularly cheap Chinese junk, and I was going to use another word, but I'm minding my manners, is they bring the wire in to the PC board rather than to the chassis. If the ground wire is properly connected to the chassis and something inside the box is making RFI, that RFI will be captured by the metal chassis and shunted to the ground connection, and it won't radiate. If you bring the wiring in and connect it to the PC board, then when you have noise, the noise will escape and radiate. This is bad. Basically, everything today is manufactured with the pin 1 defect. And more, horror of horrors, we are seeing things in plastic boxes rather than metal boxes. If you have such, you're going to have to put some kind of metal around it. So basically, you're going to get to build a Faraday cage and ground that cage. If you have an offending wall wart coming out of the outlet, you want to go shopping for something called a line filter or a power line filter. And that is a inductor and capacitor device that goes in the box behind the outlet and will isolate the wires of your house, remember every wire is an antenna, from radiating due to the wall wart. Then you will want to put ferrite chokes or ferrite beads on the wire, the power wire, immediately where it comes out of the wall wart, and again at the end, the other end, that delivers power from the wall wart down the line and then at the end to whatever device it's powering. That wire is a antenna, and the wall wart is making noise, and you've got to stop all of the noise from going out on that wire. Let's see. So we'll talk a little more about ferrite chokes in a bit. In the world of ham radio, one of your recourses is filters, and I'll be asking Joe lots of detailed questions. Basically, there are four kinds we deal with: low pass, high pass, band pass, and band stop. On my HF radio, I have what is called a low pass filter. It's a commercial filter. It's got capacitors and inductors. It was probably $200 back when. And what it does is passes the low frequencies below 30 megahertz. That's the top of the HF band, 10 meters. And it stops everything else going out above that, so I don't interfere with my neighbor's TVs. Similarly, coming in on the receive, it stops all of the energy coming in above 30 megahertz and prevents that energy from overloading the front end of my radio. And there's a key concept here. The front end of your radio can be overloaded by signals at a frequency that you're not listening to. So the ability to stop that signal from coming into the radio, either using ferrite chokes or toroids or a circuit like a low-pass filter, lets you screen out the nearby strong signals. I'm betting this is Joe's problem, but we'll investigate more. A high-pass filter goes in the other direction. So if you have somebody like with a TV that has a problem, you put a high-pass filter to pass the higher frequencies for TV and screen out or lock out the ham radio HF frequencies. I have bought filters for a number of my neighbors back in the days when we had analog TVs. W2MIC. A band pass filter is a filter that passes just the frequencies within the band and screens out everything else. These are very commonly used in amateur radios. They're often called crystal filters. And in my radio, I have, radios plural, I have a narrow filter for Morse code, a wider filter for digital, and a wider still filter, about 2 kilohertz, for voice. And what these do is screen out the other frequencies so that only the frequencies you're trying to listen to come through. They can be at the front end of the radio. Sometimes they're called a roofing filter in that position. They can be in the middle of the IF chain, which is where crystal filters hang out, or they can be in the audio. So I have a TimeWave DSP 599, which takes the audio out of the radio and runs it through bandpass filters and digital signal filters. That's probably the worst solution. You really want to keep the bad stuff out of the radio in the first place, rather than passing the bad stuff all the way through the radio and trying to filter it out of the audio. Lastly, you have what is called a band stop filter, or a notch filter. And this is a filter you use when you have a particular frequency, like the grow lights of your next door neighbor, and you position the notch filter to knock out just that frequency. Within modern radios, we have digital signal processing, and digital signal processing usually involves a 16 or 32-bit processor that chops up the audio, transforms it into digital, does all kinds of cool digital magic to take out the noise and screen out the bands, and then transforms back into audio and gives it to you cleanly. I think we are all going to be driven to radios with built-in DSP due to the proliferation of unregulated noise generators like solar chargers and inverters and grow lights and smart lights and dimmable lights and all that kind of good stuff. Okay, Joe, that was a long burst. We should probably pause for questions.
Does anybody else have anything that they'd like defined? Any questions at this time or comments?
Kilo One, Charlie Oscar Lima with a question.
Go ahead, Charlie Oscar One.
You were mentioning about the bonding of the ground wire to a metal chassis, and that some radios may be bonded to the CP board. Is it feasible to just add a ground bond from your power source to the chassis, or do you have to remove the ground bond from the CP and then add it to the chassis?
W2MIC, either approach works.
W0CSD with a question.
Go ahead, CSD.
So, Mike, you mentioned the green going to the basically the Faraday cage. That makes sense. As far as the mobile setup, how does this come into play?
W2MIC, oh horror of horrors. Mobile is the worst problem in the world because you have the ability for engine electrical components to radiate and get picked up by your antenna. But I'll start at the beginning. Coming from the battery, you run nice, thick, twisted pairs, not just two wires in parallel, but tightly twisted. You bring them down to the radio, and as close to the chassis of the radio as you can get, you run at least six, preferably eight loops through a toroid choke. That will stop the RFI from the engine and the alternator and the 23 digital computers that you have in your car today, etc., from getting into the chassis via the power lines. On your antenna cable, your coax, coming from your Motorola mount on the roof or your mag mount or whatever, you put a number, depending on the flexibility of that coax, you wrap that coax six or eight times through a split toroid, or you put a bunch of clip-on chokes on.
Excellent information. I appreciate that. Hey, Joe, are there going to be minutes on these presentations? These are very helpful. I just happen to be driving right now, so I'm not writing this down. But anyway, I appreciate the information. Really like the new format. Joe, back to you, W0CSD.
We're not going to give minutes because I don't have the time to write everything down, but I get a lot of things sent. Thank God for Mark. He sends me a lot of things, and I post them, whatever he does send me, I post them on the resources page where anybody, you don't have to be a member to get into, that's where they're at, I guess you could say. In the future, as Katie said, TYU, in the future what we plan on doing is actually have audio files that we're going to put on the website that will handle this. Kevin said he's volunteered to do that, and then they'll be posted on. So these are usually about 90-minute presentations, so there may be a possibility of downloading them and just keeping them, but right now we're just looking at actually just recording what we do. But right now we're not at that point.
Copy that. I appreciate it. It's good information regardless. And Mark, I think I stepped on you earlier there, but I wanted to apologize for calling you Mike. W0CSD, I'll let it go back to Ned.
GES.
Go ahead, Kevin.
If everything works properly, I'm starting that process with tonight's net. I'll see when I'll make sure of that when I get home. N7GES.
Oh, thank you for that. Well, and I can get them posted on the website. That's not a problem. Are there any other questions for Mark or anyone else about this subject? Please call.
This KD0TBB, Ken. What is that website you're referring to?
It's a club website, ncarc.net.
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of it. I got NCA, and what was the remainder?
Well, you know us guys from Chicago, we talk fast, so I got to quick. It's probably my fault. NCARC.net. It's Northern Colorado Amateur Radio Club.net.
Okay, thank you very much.
Any other questions about this subject?
I got in on the tail end of it. This is KD0YOR. What were you talking about?
RFI.
I have a lot of it down here in my ham shack. OJ can attest to it. This is KD0YOR. I'm trying to figure out what's going on with a lot of the interference on my antenna. I probably need somebody to come down and help me out with it. I'm relatively new at this, so.
Mark, you want to ask him some questions, maybe help him out, or whoever else would like to?
Well, this sounds like a job for a visiting Elmer with a laptop and an SDR running spectrum analyzer software. Basically, we have to measure which frequencies and how strong, and then we can start the search from there.
Okay, well, OJ had several suggestions. I haven't ever put him to task yet, but I might have to do that. Over.
W2MIC. Well, earlier on, and I think you missed it, I suggested that the beginning method is to operate your radio off of a 12-volt battery, because a battery, like a car battery, is an absolutely quiet, noise-free source. And twist your power line wires, the wires that go from the battery to your radio, don't just leave them sitting bare, because they are receive antennas. Go to your main breaker and turn it off. Just power down your whole house. Now, listen to your radio and discover whether you are still hearing the noise. If you're still hearing it, it's coming from your neighbors. If it's gone, you now get to go on a process of elimination where you turn your main breaker back on, turn off all but one breakers within your house, listen to hear if the noise is still there, and you can track down the noise source, or perhaps sources, to individual circuits. Then you get to say, okay, we're going to leave that one breaker on, and now we unplug the lights and unplug the radio and unplug the TV and unplug the computer monitor and unplug the wall warts and basically unplug everything, and then start plugging things back in until you find the noise-generating source.
Well, basically, you can play like Sherlock Holmes, huh?
Yep, every everything that isn't generating noise is not the problem, and what's left is the problem. So it's a very simple process of elimination. Tedious, boring, and makes me grouchy as all get out, but it does work. If throwing your main breaker and turning off all of the power in your house does not solve the problem, then you get to play figure out which neighbor or which local power line transformer is causing the problem and work up from there.
We've been there, we've done that, Mike. I ride up and down the street at his place and listen to 1610 in the car radio. And at his house, and I believe the neighbors or something like that, you can hear it. If you go to the next block over, he does not have an alley. You can't hear it from the east side, but you can hear it on his street. Weird.
Hi, Cooch. Yeah, I figured you were probably way ahead of me on that. So, it's time to take your AM radio, your little handheld Walkman or whatever, tune it between the broadcast stations so you're just listening to noise, and start walking around, and you will literally be able to walk right up to the house or the transformer that's generating the noise.
KD0YOR, gotcha. I will do that. OJ and I kind of did that. We kind of ascertained that it was coming from part of, out by one of the power lines, and I nagged and nagged and nagged at the power company, and they finally came out and did put in some new insulators and all that stuff, and it did help a little bit, but it's still coming from my house and I can't figure out where it's at. So there you go, a nutshell and a gospel.
Well, since Terry isn't here, I'll mention that there is a technique for discovering which transformer is causing the problems, and that is an ultrasonic listening device. MFJ sells an inexpensive one for about $175, and the big deal here is that transformers have windings, and when a transformer is generating electrical noise, it also generates audio noise. Not noise that you can hear with your ears, usually, although we've all heard transformers hum. But a bad transformer up on the power pole that's putting out crud, you can literally find with a directional dish and an ultrasonic listening device.
Oh boy, that's getting pretty technical.
I've got one, Mike, but I don't have a parabola to aim it into.
Any other questions?
N7GS.
N7GS, go ahead, Kevin.
So, it sounds like from what you're describing here, is that we're not expecting interference to be on the frequency range that we're dealing with, but other frequency ranges. Are there not times when we'll be dealing with interference that is right on our band that we're trying to deal with, rather than other places?
Ooh, good clarification question. I should have been more clear. We have two situations. The first is we're getting noise not on the frequency where we're operating, but the signal, the noise signal, is strong and is overloading the input of our receiver. That is one situation. The second situation is the one you just articulated, where there is actually noise being transmitted in the band where we are listening. In that second situation, we have to use bandpass filters, like crystal filters in a radio, or digital signal processing to build a notch filter to try to cut out that transmitted noise in our band. And or we want to shift the passband. This is more of an HF issue, where we will take a narrow filter that's maybe 2 kilohertz wide, and we will move that filter away from, the pass portion of that filter, away from the interfering signal. So so as to try to isolate or emphasize the signal we want and attenuate the signal that we don't want. That can either be a noise source or it can be some loudmouth on the band right next to the guy in frequency that we're trying to talk to.
Kevin, did that answer your question?
Yes, actually, that was good. What I was actually referring to was, I guess also the other thing I was asking too was, some of these things that we are blaming for interference, such as equipment and that sort of thing, are we suggesting that they are never radiating interference directly on our frequency?
Kevin, what's the source you're talking about?
Sorry, I'm doing a bunch of things at once here. interference from other equipment, power supplies, wall warts, other things like that, televisions, are we essentially saying that those are never going to be producing interference on the band we're dealing with, but other bands and overloading?
Both. In particular, I have an older laptop that has a screen that is way the heck out of spec, and if I bring my Yaesu FT60R handheld within 5 feet, I cannot receive anything on any frequency. The screen of the computer is putting out so much hash that it completely overloads the radio out of band and in band. Certainly, radio equipment in your shack, in particular switching power supplies, will generate HF birdies for sure, and probably VHF and UHF birdies. My particular switching power supply actually has some circuitry that lets me change the frequency of the switching so I can move the birdies around. I can't make them go away, but if the power supply is generating a birdie, otherwise known as loud noise on one particular frequency in my ham band, I can tell the switching power supply to move that birdie a bit so that I can then operate on that frequency. And boy, that's a whack-a-mole problem. This is one of the reasons that linear power supplies are so strongly preferred. Wall warts, like the one powering my computer and the one powering my inkjet printer, are both terrible noise generators in the VHF and UHF bands.
Okay, great, thank you. N7GES.
Yep, I have some equipment that I literally have to unplug when I want to use VHF and UHF.
N0 WIQ.
N0WIQ, you're back, huh, Carrie?
Well, the problem I had earlier is I turned my headset off and I didn't know I did it, so. Anyway, I once had a dual band radio in my vehicle, my car. And it had a detachable front panel and a long microphone cable. And when I turned it up to full power output, it made a horrible squeal. And I went through the easy stuff first. The ferrite beads on the cables, that had no effect. Then I had a coax cable run from the battery to the radio, and that had virtually no effect. And then I insulated the radio from the coax chassis. And but lo and behold, that was absorbed. The car body was becoming an antenna. And
N0WQ, did we lose you again?
Well, I hope not, but I'm out here portable with my handheld.
Okay, any other comments, questions?
W2MIC about older car chassis.
Go ahead, W2MIC.
Older vehicles have a braided copper ground strap. from the engine block, usually from the alternator, to the chassis. And since I'm a Minnesota boy originally, I know about this in spades. As road salt gets onto that braid, the braid corrodes, and the connection between the chassis end of the braid and the chassis corrodes, and you get a not quite conductive connection between the ground strap that's supposed to be tying the entire chassis to ground and the noise generating circuitry, the alternator, the brushes, etc. One of the most common cures, particularly in older cars, and by older I mean 10 years and beyond, is to get in there, lift that ground strap, make sure that the end of the ground strap is clean, put the appropriate grease on there, make sure that the chassis side of the connection is not rusted. Both will be corroded, I promise. And maybe replace that whole ground strap. That will cure many, many a vehicular noise problem.
Any other comments or questions?
In zero to VIQ, but older cars. So we're talking about back in the 50s and the 60s. But anyway, the car body sometimes would get loose hardware, and the hardware would rattle and make noise.
Zero HIM with a late check-in and a question.
NGESF.
Hang on, Kevin. Rick was here first. Go ahead, KE0HIM.
Yeah, I was talking about the vehicle installation and noise. Now, I want to ask a question about what's called bonding. Using the braided ground straps, not necessarily for vertical doors, but the trunk lids, hoods, pickup boxes to frame and boxes to cab, and even the exhaust to the frame. I've heard about or read about that. Now, how much is that necessary?
W2MIC. I have been involved in all of the above. And I'm very sorry to give you the answer, which is, until the noise problem's gone, maybe all of it. That is to say, everything you just mentioned, doors, quarter panels, rocker panels, exhaust, etc., you may have to bond copper braid between all of them.
Okay. I usually don't get a lot of noise on VHF, UHF, unless I go past a three-phase set up that's got some real bad buzz and nasty noise coming through the radio, but for the most part, it's pretty quiet.
Any other questions?
Yeah, GES, yes.
Go ahead, Kevin.
I think this ties into what I was about to ask a minute ago and what comment that Kerry made. All of this is related. Kerry mentioned the hardware on the car body being loose and rattling. And I think, I'm guessing, Kerry, what you were referring to is not physical, not audible noise that you hear from the body itself, but static you'd hear over the radio that was caused by that rattling hardware. I wanted to clarify that because yes, I've seen where loose hardware of and this isn't just dealing with vehicles but other devices as well. Anything that vibrates that's loose is liable to cause some static because it's changing the electrical potential in the other metal structures around it. Kerry, am I right that you were talking about noise heard through the radio by loose, rattling hardware?
Roger, Kevin. I was talking about that. The idea of taking two pieces of metal and striking them together and hearing electrical noise out of it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought, and I thought that might be important to emphasize because it's not always something you'd think about You might notice noise on bumpy roads, but you might also notice noise just from the car running because of vibration on loose parts, which then again goes back to grounding everything and making sure everything is you know, tight and grounded together, but also tight so that it's not physically loose and vibrating and causing interference that way. N7GES,
yes.
Okay, anyone else?
N1COL.
Go ahead with your question.
You guys are talking about loose parts on cars and all that. Would that be the same for your house, your outlet, if you had loose ground attached to your outlet or in your panel maybe? Would that possibly create problems by having a loose ground in that arena as well?
Absolutely, yes.
Anything else?
Evening, Joe, WA9FBL.
Well, hi, Bob. Our topic tonight is radio frequency interference. Would you care to comment?
I've been listening for about the last half hour, and I'm just curious whether you addressed alternator whine in the first half hour, and if not, I would throw on my 2 cents worth.
He did not, and please do.
Okay. This is not exactly RFI. I look at alternator whine as audio interference, but I had a new Trans Am many years ago that was horrible on alternator whine, and I heard it through my Regency HR2, you old-timers know what that is, very well. And no amount of the typical RFI precautions fixed the problem. So I decided it was probably a kilohertz or two coming through the electrical system, and I ended up putting a big inductor in series with the 12-volt lead going to the radio. And I mean big. It was probably a Henry. A lot of iron, big old choke. I don't think you fix such things by twisting the 12-volt wires or doing shielding, things like this, because the frequency is so low. Even ferrite beads have no effect at audio. So a big iron choke fixed the problem. So maybe cars don't have that problem anymore. I haven't seen it in my more recent cars, but it was a big deal back then. WA9FBL.
Okay, zero OJ.
Go ahead, OJ.
Another source, if you wish to call it that, is a high resistance connection, i.e., sometimes people have said, you got your alternator whine back, so I pulled the cigarette lighter plug on my dual band rig and wiped the tip off on my shirt or my pants or something, and rub the ground thingies as well, and shove it back in, and the alternator whine goes away until the connections get dirty again. Also, high resistance connections, i.e., crimped connections that have oxidized, etc., etc., will do the same thing for some reason. We'll let the alternator whine get in.
Very good points, thank you. Anyone else?
As Larry W7LRY with a comment and a question.
They used to emit signals, trash radio signals, and you had to put in resistance wires for the spark plugs.
Larry, I got you. Go ahead with your comment and question.
Yeah, sorry, I doubled with Kerry. Well, my comment, I guess, first, I've only had the radio on about 10 minutes, so you probably already covered this, but years ago I had a lot of alternator whine and other noises and on an HF rig, and found that if you've got the a radio that has a good noise blanker, that eliminates about 90% of your noise. I'm sure that's been covered, but I thought I'd mention it just in case it hasn't. And my question is, let me reset. My question has to do with mobile antennas. Specifically, what I'm thinking of is a Diamond NR22L. It's a real high-gain monoband 2-meter antenna. But it has a phasing element that's called 2 5/8 plus 1/4. And I can't figure out, I don't know what that means. I wonder if somebody could help me. W7LRY.
Anybody out there can help Larry with that?
I don't know. N0WIQ. A guess would be that since they have, they use the car body for an image plane, and then the coax cable goes to the radio. And I presume it has something to do with matching the antenna to a 50-ohm load.
Joe, I can answer that one if nobody else will.
Go right ahead, W2MIC.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Diamond page for the November Romeo 22 Lima. It is specified as being 2 5/8 wave sections and 1 1/4 wave section. And what that means is that this is a vertically stacked set of antenna elements. A single 5/8 wave element would be 5/8 of 2 meters. If you put one resonating element and then some kind of a section that connects those two elements, and that's what the big bulging thing in the middle is, then you can put another element on top, and now you have the gain of the first 5/8 element and then the second 5/8 element on top of that, or twice the gain of a single 5/8 wave element. And then, according to the spec, they've got an additional quarter wave element, which is probably not doing a whole lot for gain. But this is a very common technique for both mobile antennas and base station antennas, is to vertically stack magnetically coupled elements so that you get not just one antenna element, but two or three or four. And those patterns are all additive, so you get lots more gain than you would get if you had just one radiating element.
Okay, that's wonderful, Mark. I appreciate that. That was driving me crazy trying to figure that out. It was advertised as 6.5 gain, dB gain, and I couldn't understand how that worked. I understood how the phasing coil in between the two worked, but I didn't understand that I was reading it wrong. It's two separate 5/8 sections plus a 1/4 on the top. So that cleared it up, and I sure do appreciate it. W7LRY.
Yep, your explanation is correct, and you are most welcome.
Okay, Mark, you had some questions for me. What were they?
Well, with respect to your specific RFI problem on, I believe it was 40 meters, it turns on at a particular time, and have you tried throwing Joe's house's breaker to turn off all of Joe's power to make sure that this is not coming from some timer-driven device in Joe's house?
Hang on just a minute. I'm going to play this because Bob's new in here, Larry's new in here. I've actually got it up right now, and we're getting nothing but interference. This thing started at 7:06 p.m., so I'm going to play this first, and then I'll come back with my comments. Yes and no. We tried it. My wife was listening, but I wasn't really sure that she understood what she was listening to. I have tried a couple different things which I had read about. First of all, I went to a battery for this. It's on 857. I went to a battery. That didn't seem to change anything. I noticed the AM radio is a new one, and I do have an AM radio here, but it is plugged into a circuit. It's not a battery-operated one, so it's not really, might not be a good source. I also ran it into a dummy load because I'd heard that it possibly could be a chassis problem. I'm going to let this drop a minute. And when I ran into a dummy load, of course, it went away. So that's what I've done so far.
So to play back, you ran off a battery and still had the same noise. You disconnected your antenna and connected a dummy load into your transceiver, and the noise went away. So that would tend to indicate that the noise is not coming in over the power line, but rather is coming in via the antenna. What have you done in terms of toroids or chokes or loops, coils of coax, to try to block the, what I'm assuming is the common mode signal coming into the radio?
I'm going to the website. Okay, because I'm running 9913, I went to Dan, and Dan didn't have a choke, but he recommended this Palomar Engineer snap-on type, and there was five different ones. I snapped it on the line, and it made no difference. From talking to both Dan and James, they differed in what they said, because Dan wanted me to put it out by the antenna. James says it's already got one out there. It's better off to put it up by the radio. So I put it up by the radio, and it didn't make any difference at all.
Well, first, ferrite chokes are frequency specific, so this is why we need to know the frequency of the noise coming in and killing you. And the second is that I didn't really talk about this, and I should have, there is a threshold effect with ferrites. If you don't have enough ferrite core, don't get the noise quieting effect. So one bead might not do it, two might not do it, 10 might. And this is something that you get to go look at the spec books or call tech support, because if you don't have enough ferrite, either enough toroid or enough wraps, or in the case of clip-ons, enough clip-on beads, you won't get any effect.
Well, this was supposed to be good from 1.5 to 1,000 megahertz, and it was good for everything up to 80. But it said for 160, you had to buy another kit. So it was a kit that basically would handle anything. I'm assuming from 80 down or 80 up, if you will. And my problem is not on 80. In fact, 80 is fine. 20 is fine. It's all in 40 meters.
GES.
Go ahead, Kevin.
So, Joe, do I understand that you have not yet tried to run that radio on a battery and shut your own power off to see if there's something inside the house causing it?
As I said, yes and no. I'm not sure my wife really understood what she was listening to. And, of course, I had to go out there and shut it off and on. So I'm not really saying that yes or no. I'm hopefully tomorrow I can probably see that. But usually in the morning it's probably okay. That's why I'm wondering if it isn't something. We went over through this house, and there's really nothing at 7 to 7:15 that turns on automatically that we're aware of. I'm not saying it isn't in here. I'm just saying that it's kind of doubtful. It does sound like it might be the neighbor's stuff. And I guess I wasn't aware that you could just take an AM radio and just wander around and catch it that way.
Okay. Well, my only reason for asking that was just to begin trying to narrow down what it might be coming from. And don't forget that there's a lot of things that activate intermittently. All kinds of computer devices may activate intermittently depending on what they're being called to do, even if they're not actually turning lights on and off or
things like that too. So it may not be obvious to you, but it may still be something that's going on and off, depending on other circumstances that are necessary for the other appliances operation. And that's, I guess, one of the reasons I wondered if you might, you know, just even manually yourself shut the breaker. Even manually yourself, just go shut the breaker off and then come back and listen yourself so that you know, if the sound is gone when it happens. And then, of course, that's all very inconvenient. I haven't done it myself over here either, but if you've got something that's that regular and that disruptive, it might be a place to start, at least so that you have some idea whether it's you or something nearby.
LRY.
Go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, I don't know if this will help you. And again, coming in late, I don't know what all you've talked about. A couple of years ago, we updated to a new furnace. I had this horrible, horrible RFI noise. It was so bad you couldn't even turn an AM, regular AM radio on, and it just would wipe out 20 meters. And I had them come back on warranty and put a filter in the furnace, and that cut it down so you could use an AM radio, but it didn't take it off on 20 meters on my ham radio. So the point I'm trying to get to, reset here. The point I'm trying to get to is that the new furnaces have a horrible, horrible motor in there that puts out a lot of noise. So if you're running either just your furnace or just your furnace fan alone or your air conditioner, that very well could be the source. And I found there's only one way to get rid of it, and that's unplug your antenna. I actually have to turn in the wintertime, I actually have to turn the thermostat down before I can use 20 meters.
That must get a little cold for sure. One thing that I do notice, though, it's consistent. There's no on and off. There's nothing like this. It's on for hours, which makes me think I had one suggestion that could be a plasma TV. I don't have plasma TV, but I don't know what the neighbors have got either. But it goes on for hours. It's not something that turns off and on, which would make me wonder if it would be something. I have turned off a lot of things here in this room. I've shut off all the computers. I've got a small refrigerator. I've unplugged all that stuff, ran off a battery, and still I've got the same noise. So, like I say, it's sporadic. Very seldom I catch it during the day, but, of course, 40 meters is not worth a dang during the day. But it's, like I said, it's between 7 and 7:15, pretty much every night, that's what that noise was.
How about the neighbor's air conditioner?
Or your neighbor's grow light?
I can't go there. I don't know. I know the neighbor on the north side very well. We've been here almost as long, actually longer than I have been here. And so I could probably talk to him. The other one on the other side, on the south side, is new, so he'd have to do that. But I'm not really sure it's them. I mean, I am going to take Kevin's suggestion and find out myself whether it's power down on this thing. But it's just on 40 meters. The UHF, VHF is fine. Even 80 meters is fine. 20 is great. I just have this problem on 40, and I kind of like 40.
W2MIC. Well, since the timing is so consistent, I would bet money that you have a neighbor running a timer to turn on a lamp with a compact fluorescent bulb on a dimmer.
There was also something in a past QST where a guy's track lighting, the wall wart for the track lighting was just eating him alive. He finally found it.
Well, again, the AM radio walking around the neighborhood is not a bad idea. I guess I wasn't aware you could do that. And I think I could find it. If that is true, I think that that would be a big improvement. But I guess if it's on 40 meters, how could I really determine whether or not, I mean, can you pick this up on an AM radio, even on 40 meters?
Maybe. Got a friend with an 817.
Say again, OJ, I missed that. I've got a phone call coming in, but whatever you said, please repeat it.
You got a friend with an 817.
Yeah, James got one.
Bingo. Walk around. Since it only seems to be on 40, and if it's going to be, you know, you go outside of 40, it might get weaker and you get closer and then you can pinpoint it.
I guess I'm not familiar with what an 817 actually is.
Foxtrot Tango.
I didn't know it was a Yaesu, but I didn't know what it was.
Little 5-watt rig that's got its own battery inside of it, and it does 300 KC, or what, 30 KC to 1 gig, something like that. So it'll do 40, 60, 80, 160, 2, blah, blah, all modes.
And it's got a built-in battery pack and a little chintzy antenna that you put on the antenna port, walk around with it.
That's a great suggestion. I'm looking at a picture of it now. I didn't realize they were that small. I've never seen one before. That's kind of cool.
Or a KX3. Or a mobile radio with a small battery.
Yeah, but again, I got to go to 40 meters, so the Bofang won't handle it, I don't think.
W0JBR.
W0JBR, go ahead, James.
In the interim, it might be worth your while to still go out there prancing around in the dark with an AM radio. You might be just picking up the outskirts of where it's transmitting. I was able to find the noise source in my neighborhood, and I was able to finally catch it with an 11-meter radio because it was coming so bad. And same situation as you. It would start up about 8:15 at night, and it would stay all the way until the wee hours of the morning, which made me kind of believe it was somebody's fluorescent lights. But the AM radio is still worth your while because as you get closer, it might still be coming in quite a bit louder.
LRY.
Go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, before you do all that, I sure would start with my own house because if you've got a neighbor very far away, it's not nearly as likely as your own house. And things like hidden doorbell transformers and all sorts of things. So the old circuit breaker idea would sure be your best bet for your first step.
Yeah, hopefully it'll come back tomorrow morning or so and I can do this. Occasionally, I think it was Saturday, it was up doing that. And we tried an experiment, but it wasn't really successful, I don't think. But I guess that's probably the best. We'll work on the house first. If we rule that out, that's fairly simple to do. Then we'll do that. And if not, I'll borrow James's 817 and I'll wander out. But I will try the AM radio, too. Kind of like that because I don't have to borrow anything from him. He's busy enough as it is. I don't want to bother him too much. So, anyway, thanks, guys. Appreciate that.
Joe, I have some more questions for you.
Certainly, go ahead.
Is the noise you are getting single frequency birdies? So as you turn the tuning knob across 40 meters, Are there specific frequencies where the noise comes in and then it goes away and then a little different comes in? Or is the noise just constant all across the band as you turn the tuning knob?
I just did it to make sure it's all across the band and never lowers or anything. It's loud no matter where you're at on the whole band.
Okay. And what do you have in terms of crystal filters or digital signal processing filters in the radio? Did you say you're using a 706?
857.
And do you have any crystal filters in there, like a voice filter, a signal sideband filter, or a CW filter?
I have no idea, to be honest with you.
Okay, well, we can take this offline, telephone or Skype or something. There are some more experiments we can do with your radio that will tell us some more about what the noise is.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, I didn't want to take this thing over. I wanted everybody else to have an opportunity to work with this also. So, are there any comments or questions about this subject? Please call. Okay, are there any other questions for the net while we're still here? Please call. Well, I'd like to thank everybody. The net lasted 95 minutes tonight. We had 23 check-ins, which is almost a record here for this. I do appreciate everybody for checking in. And we will be back again next Monday night. And my topic, I have no clue what it's going to be, but I'll have something by tomorrow or the next day. And I'll send it out on the members list, and y'all can jump in if you'd like. So thanks to everybody. If there's no other questions for the net or no other business for the net, the repeater's open to general use. Everybody have a pleasant evening.